You might have been surprised to see an editorial about disappearing moose in today's New York Times. Nestled in between pieces on voter ID laws and tobacco sales, but that might speak to just how beloved the moose is and how urgent their recent disappearance has become. Scientists are unsure of why the moose are dying off in large numbers, but suspect that it might be linked to climate change, or at least the way climate change affects the moose's parasites, predators, and natural habitats. But as the Times pointed out, despite being large creatures, moose remain relatively hidden. They don't travel in herds, they're hard to track, and their high body fat content causes them to decompose quickly, making their die-off extremely difficult to study. Joining us now to explain both the disappearance and the challenges of figuring out its causes are Christine Rhines, certified wildlife biologist and moose project leader at the New Hampshire Fish and Game Department, and Dr. Michelle Carstensen, wildlife health program supervisor at the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources. Welcome to our show.
Thank you.
And I'm going to throw this out to both of you, but you probably should identify yourself, the one who answers. The area that moose live in stretches across North America from British Columbia and Montana to Maine and New Hampshire. Are moose disappearing all across this region? Christine.
We'll start. So no, and they are not. But there are selected areas that they seem to be not doing too well. And New Hampshire just happens to be one of those.
Are new moose being born?
Oh, yes. Yeah, but at least in New Hampshire, they are dying. Many of them die before they reach reproductive age. And a higher number of our adults die than you would expect given the absence of wolves. And their reproduction is declining.
So they're dying young. That's one of the reasons this is a mystery. Weren't moose relatively rare in New Hampshire until the 1970s? What led them to move in?
Well, they were rare, but they existed here in fairly large numbers prior to European colonization. And they became rare due to unrestricted hunting, both subsistence hunting and market hunting. And then when a Fish and Game Department was first formed, one of the first things they did was protect moose, and moose were able to make a comeback. So they made a strong comeback right around the 1970s, and they were doing fine up until about 10 years ago.
Michelle, what have you observed in Minnesota?
Yeah, in our situation, we had moose kind of across the northern part of the state, which is really sort of the southern extent of moose range. If you look broader into the region and into Canada, that really represents that southern boundary of their range. And we used to have moose across the northern part of the state. And in the 80s, we had about 4,000 moose in our northwest part of the state. And in 20 years, that's dropped down to less than 100. So that population is nearly extirpated from that part of the state. And with that rapid decline, researchers and folks with RDNR were very interested to see what was happening in the northeast part of the state, where we still had a stronghold of moose. At that time, we had about, at the peak, 8,000 or so animals in the 90s. And now they've been declining as well. Our most recent survey has just less than 3,000 moose in northeast Minnesota, and that represents a 52% decline, even from just as recently as 2010.
Aren't those two moose populations different?
No, they're the same population. They just, due to the restrictions in their range, they just ended up kind of having pockets of survivors in our northeast, northwest parts of the state, but they're not different moose. They're all the same moose.
Are we seeing the same thing with Alaskan moose?
I think from what I've read, Alaskan moose are still doing quite well. I'm actually coincidentally at a conference today with moose researchers from Ontario and Manitoba and Saskatchewan and North Dakota. We've been sharing information about how our moose are doing in the region, so I can share with you a bit on that. Of course, I've already talked a little bit about the Minnesota situation, but even in Manitoba, for some of their more boreal forests or kind of the more traditional moose range, they've seen declines. Yet in other portions of the state, where they never really had as many moose before, they're seeing increases in some of their agricultural areas. And Saskatchewan is actually identifying some of the same trends where they've opened up new hunting units in parts of the state where there weren't moose before, and some of their more traditional moose habitats are seeing somewhat of a decline. And these are very interesting for all of us to talk about, because a lot of the same stressors and what we believe is factors that might be influencing this are shared among our provinces and state, and we're all seeking the same types of answers.
So, Chris, are the moose migrating northward?
Well, they don't really migrate. What's going to happen if this trend continues is our southern moose will die off, and right now our northernmost population seems to be doing fine. So we're hoping that these animals won't die off completely, that they may just go down to lower numbers where parasite involvement also becomes less possible. And maybe we'll be able to hold on to them. We really don't know what the future holds, though.
Well, because the die-off is occurring in warmer areas, is the assumption that climate change is playing a major role in all of this?
Well, the role that climate change may be playing is that for us, we did a study 10 years ago and collared a little over 100 moose. And at that time, winter tick was the primary source of mortality for both our adult and our calf moose. And winter tick is influenced by both moose density. At higher densities, it becomes much more prevalent. And also shorter winters. And our winters continue to become foreshortened, both from the beginning of the winter and from the end, kind of meeting in the middle, and that gives winter tick an enormous boost and allows it to stick around and be a problem every single year.
Now, what does winter tick do to the moose?
Well, they are different from like your average dog tick or a Lyme tick. They quest in the late fall, and they quest the entire egg mass when it hatches. It stays together, and all of those, I call them ticklets, all of those ticks quest as a group.
That makes them sound cute. My sense is they're not that cute.
Probably baby ticks are cute, but in any event, they get on as a mass. So rather than ticks getting on them individually, they'll get 100 ticks on them, the moose on them at one go. And if you have a long open fall without an early snowfall, or what we consider to be a normal snowfall, those ticks will continue to quest and be able to get on moose. So in a bad year, you'll have over 100,000 ticks on an individual moose. And that causes, they start to feed heavily in the late winter, early spring. That causes an enormous immune response. The moose are scratching all the time. They can't rest. They are literally scratching their own hair off. And these calves, we've done the math, as it were. The calves will have to replace their entire blood volume at least once, and sometimes twice.
They become anemic?
Yes, and this occurs at a time when these animals are physiologically at a low ebb, and so they die due to simply anemia or hypothermia or other immune problems that happen just because they've got this enormous stressor on their immune system, and their immune system becomes impaired.
Now, some people have been calling infected moose ghost moose. Why ghost moose?
Oh, well, as they groom their hair off, the hair shaft breaks, and it gives them a white appearance because you see the white in the middle of the hair shaft.
Now, Michelle, is that kind of tick also found in Minnesota?
It is. We have winter tick here as well, and the cycles of that tick, and vary between year, you know, largely driven by winter severities. And even this year with our radio collared moose, we've documented three deaths from this past winter from basically the same thing. They get very anemic and health compromised and really die from exposure at that point because they've lost so much hair still when there's quite cold temperatures and they still need to thermoregulate and have difficulty doing so.
So they're susceptible to the cold because they don't have enough hair to protect themselves?
Exactly, yep. And we find that here as well, as and we also have other parasites that affect our moose, including liver flukes and brain worm or Peristrongylus tenuis. And, you know, and then we have wolves in Minnesota, so we also have wolf predation affecting our moose. And wolves are evolved to be able to select their prey based on them being somewhat compromised. And we've found in our wolf-killed moose, at least two of the recent cases, that they were compromised. One had a lesion in the brain, and the other had leg injury and a past wound that predisposed that animal to being killed by wolves.
My guests are Dr. Michelle Carstensen, Wildlife Health Program Supervisor at the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources, Christine Rhines, Certified Wildlife Biologist and Moose Project Leader at the New Hampshire Fish and Game Department. Chris, has the deer population been affected by these ticks?
No, deer evolved with these ticks, and they are what we call obligate groomers. So when they get these ticks on them, they immediately groom 90% of them or better off. And moose are kind of more laid back, unfortunately, and they do not groom them off, and that's why they have such problems with them.
Michelle, in western South Dakota last weekend, tens of thousands of cattle were lost in a record-breaking blizzard that came after a week of 80-degree weather. Although these two events are unrelated, are the areas that moose live in also experiencing extreme changes in weather patterns?
I think what we're seeing is trends of warming winters. So with some of our past research, we've been able to document a trend of warming winters having a negative effect on moose survival. And they're really a cold weather species. You know, moose will begin to pant at temperatures, you know, just above 40 degrees Fahrenheit. And so they need to have cool temperatures, particularly when their coat is heavier in the winter. So having warmer winters come on, especially with less snowfall, definitely affects moose's ability to cope with those kind of changing environmental conditions. And that goes with parasite survival is enhanced, too, with warming winters and wetter springs and that kind of stuff. So it's all related. There isn't a component of this that stands out by itself. These things all are a complex relation together to influencing these types of characteristics.
Chris, don't most moose die in the fall? Why in the fall?
No. Our moose, in fact, because winter tick is the primary source of mortality, most of our winter tick mortality occurs in the month of April. And the ticks basically have impacted them to the point where they just tip over during that month. Mm. The rest of our mortality kind of occurs scattered across the year.
Doesn't moose watching represent a large chunk of New Hampshire's tourism income?
Yeah, a lot of people like to come here to see moose, so they are a big tourist draw. We have quite a few towns that have their own moose tour companies, and they pretty much are dependent on moose.
So it's like whale watching.
Yes, exactly.
Michelle, aren't moose deaths hard to study? Why is that?
Yeah, part of the reason it's difficult is that, as we already talked about, such a large body animal and they retain so much heat, when they die, they decompose very quickly. And the internal organs, which is what we really want access to, as well as the brain, to study if there's any sort of health-compromising issues, deteriorate very fast. So this is why we developed this new project using satellite-link collars that actually can transmit a signal if a moose dies directly to our cell phone, and we get a text message that tells us our moose has died and exactly the location of that animal. And we have response teams in place 24/7 to get there within 24 hours to either do a field necropsy or try to extract the whole carcass out and bring it to a diagnostic lab for full necropsy.
So
this kind of advances in technology are enabling us to respond faster to moose mortalities.
Considering the enormity of the problem, I imagine you're getting a lot of text messages in the middle of the night.
We do, yes.
So you can helicopter into some of these places because they're relatively inaccessible. Have you learned anything from your study so far?
At this point, we've already lost 18% of our sample, and at that rate, this is all from non-hunting mortality, it's a little bit high. It's 8 to 10 would be normal. So we're not even through the first year, and we're kind of seeing double the rate of mortality that would be expected if a population was healthy. So we're upset about that, of course, because that doesn't mean good things for moose. But we are able to get to those animals very timely, and we've identified a variety of causes for those deaths so far.
Chris,
including
go ahead.
I was going to say, including winter tick, as we talked about, brainworm, and then wolf predation with a lot of other underlying health conditions that feed into that.
Chris, haven't you theorized that a solution to the New Hampshire tick problem might actually be hunting for more moose?
Well, if our primary driver continues to be winter tick, because winter tick is impacted by higher moose densities, it might be in the moose's best interest to keep the densities lower so that ticks aren't as prevalent. And our own state density gradient suggests that. Down south, where our moose densities are considerably lower than up north, we rarely see moose dying from ticks. But up north, where our moose densities are higher, that is where things are, you know, moose are dying at pretty high levels due to winter tick involvement.
And then there are other issues that we didn't touch on and we don't have any time to deal with, but a recent study of the moose population in the Caribou Mountains of British Columbia blamed an epidemic of pine bark beetles for destroying enough trees to leave the moose more vulnerable to human and animal predators. Just another problem. Boy, the moose are in serious trouble. I hope they're not going to become an endangered species. My great thanks to Christine Rines, certified wildlife biologist and moose project leader at the New Hampshire Fish and Game Department, and Dr. Michelle Carstensen, wildlife health program supervisor at the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources, for being on our show today.
Thank you for having us.